From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. As we're into the year of our Lord 2021. And greatly appreciate you all being with us. And thank all the people that have helped us along the way. All the listeners, all our wonderful guests that we've had over the years, and also all of the wonderful underwriters for the Bishop's Radio Hour. It's a labor of love, and we're so pleased to have you with us today. And we're also pleased to have Father Bart Landry, the head of the Black Catholic Ministry here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Father, good day to you. We're pleased to have Father Bart Landry with us. Father, good day to you.
Good day to you. How are you?
Doing very, very well. If you'd told me when I was a little kid that I would still be around in the year 2021, when we would all be living on Mars or somewhere, I wouldn't have believed it. But here we are.
And some days it feels like we're about on Mars.
Doesn't it? Yes. Indeed, yes. It's interesting. I have four teenagers at home, and my wife, of course. And I'll tell you, there are some tough days. Not the school being what it is, and the lockdown being what it is, and two of our kids had to give up their jobs because they were kind of in retail business and part time after school type jobs. And I say to them every morning, I said, God hasn't left the building. He's still here.
That's right, and that's where our comfort is. That's
yes.
That's where our comfort is, yeah. Knowing that God, who has brought us thus far, has not brought us to leave us.
Yep. Father, tell, if you have a minute, I'd love to hear a little bit about your vocation first before we launch into the ministry you're in.
Absolutely. My vocation was a long journey, a very unusual one that, in looking back, especially most recently reflecting on my New Year's Eve prayer time, just reflecting that, I took a rather long journey around to my vocation, beginning in high school seminary. Mm-hmm. And so my period was what I would call an extra long period. But if I had to do it all over again, I would do it.
Mm, that's so refreshing to hear.
Absolutely. I would do it in this day and this time, when we find so many uncertainties and so many more questions than answers today. I still feel confident that the ministry that God has invited me into by His grace and by His love is still burning so fresh within me.
Wow.
And so, as I mentioned, I began in high school seminary, just a kind of one day, one week at a time, mm-hmm. Pursuing that vocation. And I continued, graduated from high school seminary in East Troy, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and then went on to the college seminary, my first 2 years being at St. Meinrad Seminary in St. Meinrad, Indiana, with the Benedictine monks,
mm-hmm.
and my final two graduating in my home state of St. Benedict, Louisiana. That's right near Covington, Louisiana. The big city that it's near is New Orleans.
So you're a native of Louisiana.
Absolutely. God's country.
God's country, yes.
Yes.
Can you spell jambalaya?
Oh, you put me on the spot. I can't spell it, but I'll cook it for you one day. How is that?
That's better. That's way better. Yeah, and I can't spell étouffée either, but...
There you go. I'll cook that for you as well. We right. have a deal.
All I know is that all words end in E-A-U-X.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. And it's always O.
It's always O. I remember that the great quarterback for LSU last year, his last name was Barrow, and he put on his jersey Barreaux. So, but you ended up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's that's where I started off from my high school. And at that point, through my own discernment, I have to say it was really a shot in the dark, because I, in feeling this call, I began all of the research on my own, really without any help from what I would call a vocation director, or because I really didn't know the path to take. I didn't have much guidance in that part. So there was one little blue book that used to be put out, A Guide to Religious Ministries in the Catholic Church. And that's where I began to look for seminaries, and seminaries that would take someone at 14, almost 15 years old to enter. And that Divine Word High School Seminary, which is now closed, was one that popped out to me. And you know, another one was the Franciscans just across the lake from Bennett Lake. That was also another place. And I simply applied, and with the first one that sent back to me, I took it as a sign that I guess this is where I should be. So I began the formal process of application, and believe it or not, they sent a person to come and visit me from East Troy, Wisconsin, all the way down to a little town called Church Point, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Later, I would realize is over 1,700 miles.
Wow.
Away from my hometown, because at graduation time, my family, we never really had the means to travel anywhere or do any trips outside of the state. Mm-hmm. When I graduated high school, was the first time that my family had really traveled outside of the state, and they drove through the night to get to East Troy, Wisconsin, for my graduation.
Wow.
Yeah.
So were there other vocations in your family?
No. Well, I had not immediate family, but I had two cousins. One had, she had gone into the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, but that did not work out for her. So she returned to the, back to the lay life. And is doing very well right now, still working in Florida, and living out her vocation as a single married woman, who's still very much involved in the church. And then a distant cousin who had entered the seminary, and because of the time in which he entered, some irregularities and things that we weren't really sure of. It just did not pan out for him, and so his story was not as happy, and so it was the three of us in my family.
So if you were already going to seminary in high school, how many years prior to that did you start as a young child entertaining the priesthood?
I would say as far as I can remember for sure, about the fifth grade.
Wow.
I really began to see my commitment to the church. While I went to public school up until I left for the high school seminary, I was involved in the church as an altar server. And so I had the opportunity to serve with many wonderful parish priests, some who had a significant impact on my vocation and affirmation a little bit later on. One in particular being, he's now deceased, Father Joseph Brown, who is a Josephite, the Josephite staff my home parish. And he was very instrumental in helping to nourish my vocation. He came to the parish after I had already entered the seminary, but he was very affirming and really supportive of my vocation and seeing, helping me see my way through the process So those days when I just wanted to give it all up, he gave me reasons why I shouldn't, and I didn't, and I'm glad that he did, that he was there for me.
You know, in over the years that I've interviewed priests and seminarians and even bishops and talked about their vocations, so many of them, and of course, family being very important too in terms of exposure, but also support. I've heard that word about the parish priest. My parish priest is what really got me on the road.
Yeah. There were. I served under as an altar server from shortly after I made my first communion, and so you know there were. Father Joe Brown was kind of like that fourth pastor that came in, and he was the one that, so all of the other pastors were good men, really good men, but sort of distant. With Father Brown, I was able to get much closer, and he really got involved in my life and in the process of helping me to continue to discern, and finally helping me with some direction of, you know, this is what you need to do. This is how you need to look at X, Y, or Z. So he was. That's why I say he was very influential in my vocation and helping me to discern.
So is this in the Diocese of New Orleans?
Diocese of Lafayette, Louisiana.
Oh, of Lafayette. Okay.
Yes,
I was on the campus there in Lafayette one time, and there was a pond on the campus, and I was walking by the pond, and somebody says, "There's alligators in that pond, sir. You must not be from here." And I said, I kind of laughed. I said, "Oh yeah, sure." And there's, you know, the Loch Ness monster is over there, and about 10 seconds later, here comes an alligator out of the pond in Lafayette.
There you go.
Oh, man.
They're always looking to be your neighbor.
I think I was looking for me to be their lunch. Oh, yeah. No, you're right. The very neighborly people. The old word Southern hospitality was very true there in Lafayette, that was for sure.
Yeah, and in the diocese of Lafayette, even to this day, the diocese has always been blessed with many vocations and large classes. I was back in November. I was on vacation, and I go back home to help care for my mom. I do my annual vocation, vacation. Mm-hmm. I usually take it all at one time so that I could help my family and give the rest of my siblings their turn for just a little reprieve, and I take up my slack, and that works out well for all of us. But I was able to go to a couple of events, social distance events, that involved the seminarians and in the Diocese of Lafayette, for just the diocese. They have 22 men in formation at this point. So that's in this day, that's incredible for one diocese.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes. So it is a diocese that is very spiritually rich, very very supportive of vocations.
Right. So you go off to Wisconsin, which it's got to be a little bit of culture shock coming from Louisiana.
I would say it was more than a culture shock. I had never, and I shared this vocation story many times over with different groups, but I had never really associated with any one outside of my culture, the African American culture, or the Caucasian culture in church, right? Because that's where I always was.
Right.
So that small world was my world. And when I went to the seminary and I arrived, I was picked up at the airport by by a priest, and the ride from the airport in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, back to East Troy was about a 50-mile ride.
Mm-hmm.
But not a word was said.
Huh.
Not a word was said between myself and the priest. So even on the ride, I did not know what to expect. I did not know how to relate. It was a little bit of a unnerving time.
Yeah, bet.
But I got to the seminary, and I was shown my quarters, which at that time was just a big dormitory style room.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to unpack in my little footlocker and my little chest the few things that I had, and slowly but surely, my classmates began to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, I quickly realized, none of these people look like me. None of these people talk like me. And they were all, the majority were Asians. And I remember, yes, and Vietnamese to be exact.
So they were native Vietnamese? Like first generation,
some of them,
maybe?
Actually, mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them were native,
mm-hmm.
and they had come to the U.S. And then others were first generation.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so in my class, in the seminary at the time, the total population of Vietnamese, specifically seminarians, were 52 in number.
Wow.
And there was a very small spattering. There were only two African Americans,
mm-hmm.
myself and my classmate from Chicago. There were, I would say, maybe four or five Caucasians. There were maybe three or four Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much the size of it.
Wow. Very interesting. And so you were there for how many years?
Four.
Mm-hmm. And then you went to Indiana.
Yes. Yes, after graduating in Indiana. After graduating in East Troy, then I went to Indiana. And so the seminary in Indiana, I sent off for information, and they sent me a nice video to watch and experience, and it was it is still run by the Benedictine monks,
mm-hmm.
and so that again was something that was going to be a completely new experience to me, because while I certainly heard of monks, I had never really met one in person. And strangely enough, we saw shortly before I was to go and for a visit, it was like an extended weekend visit, we watched the movie The Name of the Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was about, you know, just this this really, really weird and dark Benedictine monastery where all of the monks were going a little bit batty, and all of this stuff, and so you know, just medieval monks. And so, oh, I said to myself, oh boy, is this what I'm going into? But it was anything but that. It was quite delightful.
Wait, what town was this in?
St. Meinrad, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
The town is named after the monastery because obviously the town was built up around the
mm-hmm.
monastery.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did you at that point imagine yourself, once you're ordained, as a parish priest, or what did you imagine yourself as?
Well, you know, I was so again unsure and still feeling my way through. Now with the guidance and the help of discerning help of my parish priest, I did not, at that point, really have all of the language, but at St. Meinrad, you could attend the seminary and be in formation for 2 years as an what's called an undeclared seminary, which means that you have no commitment, no formal commitment yet to any diocese or religious community. And then in your junior year, if you continue on at St. Meinrad, you have to declare, you have to be sponsored by a religious community or diocese in order to remain in the program.
Right.
And so the there was a one of these days which many different vocation directors from dioceses, archdioceses, religious communities comes to speak to us. And one of them who was there was a the vocations director from the Diocese of Lafayette, Louisiana. And so he said, where are you from in Louisiana? I said, I'm from Church Point. He says, well, that's the you're in our diocese. Right. What are you doing up here? I said, I don't know. I'm finding my way through all of this. He said, well, I'm going to talk to the bishop, and we're going to get you into our seminary, but you probably have to come back down to Louisiana for that. I said, okay. So there wasn't much, negotiating with me. I felt that that was a help in a direction, so I accepted his lead, and I was brought down to St. Joseph's Seminary in St. Benedict, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. To finish up my last 2 years and earn my my bachelor's degree in philosophy.
Wow. And so were you incarnated in the Diocese of Lafayette?
Yes, I was part of the Diocese of Lafayette for for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And every summer I worked in a different parish. And through the experiences, again, of living and being with some very, very great priests, in my opinion, I also realized that diocesan life was not going to do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
It did not have what I felt the necessary support that I would need. You know, it's a wonderful life for those, and thank God, you know, there are so many talented diocesan priests, but the life did not have enough structure for me. So I began to look around at religious communities, and being at a Benedictine monastery for seminary, again in Louisiana, that was also run by the Benedictine monks. I, of course, began to look at them, and I actually entered the novitiate with the Benedictines. And that in itself was truly a remarkable experience, and I think it gave me the formation of a solid prayer life. It gave me direction. It gave me support, you know, with all of the built-in horarium, the day, the rhythm of the day, was very essential to helping me form within myself a true prayer experience that would continue to support my vocation. And so while I went to novitiate there, I actually entered the monastery of St. Bernard Abbey in Cullman, Alabama. And I was there as a junior monk, and then also a profess. And then I went off and I began my first 2 years of theological studies as a professed Benedictine monk. And then more and more through prayer, through discernment, through the work, the ministry that I was doing at the seminary, which was at another Benedictine monastery in St. Vincent's in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. where I was studying my theology. I began to wrestle with feeling called to a bit more of the active ministry. So, you know, it was stages for me. I had discerned that, okay, diocesan life was not for me. And I entered, you know, more of a religious community. And then, so I went from one extreme to another, where there was very much structure and your day was planned out for you and everything, the rhythm of the day. And as you experienced it, you know, one of the great mottos of the monasticism is ora et labora, work and prayer. Mm-hmm. And that's what your day consisted of. And so from there, I truly began to discern what more of the active life that I could give myself to. And I came to understand that that's, in our church language, that's called the apostolic life,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the contemplative life.
Right.
And so I visited again, once again, was given the permission to visit different apostolic life communities. And so I visited with the Jesuits, I visited with the Dominicans, I visited with the Marinos, mm-hmm. I visited with the Paulists, I visited with the Franciscans, and I felt most called, from all of those visits, I felt most called to the Paulists, which I am today. And so as a result, I left the monastery and transitioned into the Paulist apostolic life. And that was in Washington, D.C. So I went from very rural Cullman, Alabama, to Washington, D.C., where, again, it was much more of a culture shock and a very fast pace compared to what my journey had been. But again, it was great. It was a wonderful time for me, and I had to enter into a quasi novitiate again. So to give the community, the Paulist community, an opportunity to look at me, and give myself the opportunity to look more intentionally at the life of a Paulist. And so that was a very positive experience. And I went on and continued my studies. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history. With some almost 15 years later, I am a Paulist priest.
But you're 3,000 miles from Washington, D.C. Either that or you've got a heck of a commute every day.
This is right. This is right. When I finished formation and I was ordained a deacon, I did my, first of all, as students, as Paulist students, we began as students preaching. And I found very quickly that evangelization spoke to me and really resonated with me, and I really found a lot of energy. The Paulist charisms, or evangelization, reconciliation, and ecumenism and interreligious dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And of that, I found evangelization to be what really enlivened me, which really energized me. And so my first assignment as a student was to our parish in Chicago at Old St. Mary's,
mm-hmm.
Parish in downtown Chicago. I was sent there as a student for my first assignment. And then I returned after that assignment ended. I returned back to Washington, D.C. to continue more studies. And toward my diaconate, I was ordained a deacon. And then for my deacon year, I was sent back to Old St. Mary's in Chicago because it was a wonderful experience for me. So I looked forward to being there again. And after my diaconate year, I went back to Washington, D.C. to complete my studies and to be ordained a priest. And so after my ordination to the priesthood, one of the options that I was given for our first assignment as a priest was, of course, Old St. Mary's in Chicago. And so I joyfully jumped at the opportunity to return back to Chicago. That was my first assignment as an ordained priest.
Wow.
And after a year there, our community, our parish community in here in San Francisco, which is where I reside now, needed help very desperately. The pastor was really stretched thin, and so the presidential team of my community came to me and said, you know, would you be willing to go to San Francisco and be of service there? And I said, I've never been there.
I was going to ask you if you'd ever been.
No, I've never been. I've never been to the West Coast.
Did you realize that it's freezing in San Francisco all the time, even though it's in California?
Yes. Well, when I got there, the strange thing was, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but the first 6 months that I was at Old St. Mary's in San Francisco, I was absolutely miserable, and I thought this was just a big mistake. This just could not be happening now. What did this mean? That I was just really miserable, and what was this? And I came to realize in hindsight that it was simply missing the joys of my first assignment. I had been very familiar with the people of Chicago. I really enjoyed working with and ministering with the people in Chicago, a warm and loving community. And so that was that longing is what kept me unhappy, because it's just not the same, you know.
Sure.
The West Coast is a very unique place, and San Francisco makes it even more unique.
Yep.
And so, but in I would say in that six month and one day after, a light clicked on for me, and I just completely enjoyed living with the men that I live with, working with the people at the parish, and some 13 years later, here I am still in San Francisco.
So you've been at two different Old St. Mary's.
Yes.
Very interesting. So the for those unfamiliar or familiar with San Francisco, give some coordinates on where Old. I've been there, but I don't know the city well to explain exactly where it is.
Old St. Mary's is downtown. Right on the edge of Chinatown,
right,
and the financial district, up California Street, right at the bottom of Knob Hill, right where the hill comes down a little, there sits the first cathedral, Catholic Cathedral of San Francisco, which is the historic landmark number 2. That's how long it's been around, and the Paulists have been there since 1854.
Wow.
And so there is where I found my home. I, when I arrived there, I was associate pastor for 6 years, and at the same time, I was also vicar of the house, which is in a religious community. The local superior is the priest who kind of governs the local community. Mm-hmm. It is the liaison to the general community. And I became the vicar, which is the second in command. And then I later went on to become pastor and superior of the local community, and I did that for 4 years. And then I slowly began to move into evangelization, full-time evangelization, mm-hmm. which is the ministry that I'm in now. So I have full-time evangelization, preaching retreats in parish ministries, days of recollection, giving workshops of different sorts. And then I'm also part-time ministering in the Diocese of Sacramento in the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry as coordinator for Black Catholic Ministry.
So how did that connection with the Diocese of Sacramento come about?
I was at a parish in San Francisco, another parish, preaching for the Black Catholic Ministry Mass at St. Boniface, which mm-hmm. is staffed by the Franciscans and is in the Tenderloin.
Right.
And there were some people, one in particular being Charlene Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, formerly of Sacramento, who attended the Mass. And right. after the Mass, she came up to me and she said, we got to have you in Sacramento. And I said,
was she the head of the Black Catholic Ministry in Sacramento at that point?
Excuse me?
Was she the head of the Sacramento Black Catholic Ministry at that point?
Yes, I think she was just stepping off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And as I do when most people give me an invitation, you know, because sometimes I feel that it's just a courtesy. And I said, sure, yes, anytime. And that anytime followed by a call the following week, and I began to, on just a monthly basis, going over to celebrating a Black Catholic Mass at St. Rose Parish in Sacramento, mm-hmm. just once a month initially. And then that turned into a little bit more formal, and then 2 years ago, I was hired by the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry as the coordinator for Black Catholic Ministries for a bit more of a permanent presence in the Diocese of Sacramento.
And what does that all involve?
I'm part of the team that is directed by Deacon Kevin Staskow in the office. And as part of the team, I do my best to assist my other team members who are at Sac State Newman, who are doing North State and Young Adult Ministries mm-hmm. Within the Diocese of Sacramento. And I do my best to assist all of them in the pastoral needs that they may encounter in hopes of bringing about an awareness to the Black Catholic population that they may encounter. And so that's been flourishing a bit at Davis Newman Center now. Mm-hmm. There is a very much more direct and focused effort at reaching out to the Black Catholic community at Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So my role there is more as a liaison between the Black Catholic and athletic
community
there. Yes, and so that's going to bring about hopefully much more of a connection to the Newman Center.
Oh, very interesting. Have you worked with Dan Hawkins and Jim Less and some of those people?
No, actually, I work with just the Newman side of it right now.
Uh-huh.
So, I work with Vince Nims and Roberta.
Oh, good.
Who are the directors and
good
program
people.
Directors of them. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So the Catholic Church has, you know, in the last several years has launched a real strong initiative against racism, Open Wide Our Hearts. what do we need to do as Catholics? I mean, where are our blind spots?
You know, I say it lovingly, but in truth and honesty, I say that we still in the Catholic Church have a long way to go. Because I still do not believe that, for the most part, that the Catholic Church is truly hearing the needs of the Black and African American community in terms of spirituality. There's a whole spirituality that goes with being Black and African American in the church, and that is so undervalued and in some cases, unfortunately, devalued. And it's just it's seen as, oh, I have a few Black people in this parish, so I will give them a mass once a month, and that should suffice for them. And yet our spirituality and our spiritual needs are so much more than that. So I think we as a Catholic Church need to really begin to delve more into what is that spirituality, and what does that spirituality do for members of a community, because it's more of a cultural realization of how people of a certain culture relate to God because of their experiences. So just as valuable as, say, the Hispanic ministry within the church, which has been given a lot of energy, the Asian ministries in the church, you know, it's still amazing to me that here we are now 2020, and the Black Catholic ministry in the church is just starting to get this attention now. And so an openness, I think there needs to be a greater openness to learning, because from my experiences thus far of concentrating more of my time and energy, there's still a an inclination of the church to kind of say, when the African American and Black communities are speaking, to still say, oh yes, we know that, but here is how you're going to do it, instead of asking the questions, how can we support you in your ministry? So still, there's still a lot of lip service that is being given, but a lot more of creative ministry needs to be invited by the Black and African American community in the church. There is a resistance on the part of some priests, even bishops, to think that worship only has to happen, especially around the celebration of the Eucharist, only has to happen one way, and that is absolutely it. And if it's not done exactly that way, then it's called into validity. It's called into question. And so you have a whole culture of people that are saying, but what about my spiritual needs that are not being met? How do I address that? And I get this question so often from Black and African Americans that I work with in the diocese. How can I go to my parish priest and tell him so that he understands me, that my spiritual needs are not getting met here? And this is why we have so much disenfranchised Black and African American Catholics, because if they're not getting spiritually what they need, spiritually fed, they are going to seek out nourishment. And so we have a lot of our Protestant brothers and sisters who are baptized Catholics, but because they did not feel that their spiritual needs were being met by the church, they went where they felt it was being addressed.
Wow. Well, there's a lot more we need to talk about for sure. I greatly appreciate your time today, and I hope when this pandemic eases, we can do this face to face.
Absolutely. And I say, you know, this is despite the pandemic, thankfully, this has been a very busy time for me as I continue to work on different talks and presentations and looking at opportunities to bring to the table the voice of the Black and Catholic spirituality of the church, and trying to get the message across that while there are some aspects that may be slightly different from the norm, if you will, that there's still a great need, and the time for us to address this is now, and we can't let this, and we can't just treat it like just another ministry in the church, but we have to give it a focused attention.
Very, very well said. Father, we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon. God's blessings to you for a holy and happy new year, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much. That's
God bless you.
Thank you, Father. That's Father Bart Landry from the Black Catholic Ministry within the Department of Evangelization and Catechesis here in the Diocese of Sacramento. So much happening in our diocese. Protect every life. Yeah, we're into the month of January, and this brings us up on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And a lot of activities planned here in the Diocese of Sacramento within the next couple of weeks. Beginning Monday, January 11, prepare with us, Culture Project Talk, Human Dignity. That'll be at 7 o'clock. These will all be online. You go to scd.org/protect every life. And then on Tuesday, Wednesday the 13th, in Spanish on Tuesday the 12th at 7 p.m., the Culture Project talk as well. Wednesday, January 13th, live action talk, Transforming Hearts, Saving Lives. You're all invited to pray with all of us a Respect Life Novena beginning on January 14th. That's a Thursday running through Friday, January 22nd. And then Thursday, the 21st, day before the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, at 7 p.m., Young Adult Evening, Into the Mix. And then on Friday, January 22nd, a day of reparation as declared by Bishop Soto, Respect Life Mass on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, beginning at noon at the Cathedral. And, of course, with the COVID restrictions, this will be live streamed noon. From the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. And then on the next day, Saturday, January 23rd, you're invited to walk in solidarity with testimony, live ultrasound, all beginning at 10:30 a.m. Again, Facebook Live at SCD Formed Faith or scd.org/protect every life. And if you donate at any amount, you can receive a Diocese of Sacramento Respect Life packet that includes a Protect Every Life mask, a digital Novena prayer card, Young Saint cards. Gabe, are you one of those Young Saint cards?
I think my namesake, you know, has been a
you
chance
haven't been
of me.
Yet.
No, I haven't been canonized.
And additional Respect Life information proceeds go to some of our favorite projects, Sacramento Life Center, the Gabriel Project, the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home here in Sacramento, and the Mother Teresa Maternity Home up in Placerville. So, again, go to scd.org, protect every life, and learn about all these great events coming up in the month of January in the next week or two. And also the please join in the novena, which begins Thursday, January 14, runs through Friday, January 22nd.
What was the thing Bishop Soto said? Not to, like, because I know you had said that you dislike calling it an anniversary of Roe v. Wade. He called it a commemorance or a observance?
Commemoration or observance, yeah.
Something
I mean,
like
anniversary.
That. Much more respectful idea of it.
We anniversary just means.
Yeah, I mean, we're not celebrating, yeah, obviously,
exactly.
Yeah.
You tend to think of it as birthdays or weddings or.
Yeah, it is kind of a rough one to say for that, though, anniversary, because you don't really want to, you don't want to put any kind of positive spin on it.
No.
So,
no.
Yeah. Observance is good, because observance is something you do at a funeral,
right.
or when the passing of someone, the yearly commemoration of passing is an observance. So.
And, you know, here in the Diocese of Sacramento, there's just such a strong pro-life presence. Sacramento Life Center has been around as long as Roe v. Wade, actually longer. Didn't spring up in response to Roe v. Wade, actually predated it. California actually had legalized abortion prior to Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
And so California is as quote-unquote pro-choice as a lot of the state is, it's also very pro-life.
Well, despite what a lot of people like to think, life is actually part of the choice.
That's right.
People, so many people who say they're pro-choice have one choice in mind.
Yeah, and that's that's very much been the case, and we've seen that, and we just hope that everybody, even as we live in this so-called pro-choice world, we hope that the choice of life gets out there. Very loudly and clearly, and so loudly and clearly that people respect life to the point where if abortion doesn't go away by law, that it goes away in practice, just because people take that as a part of our ethos, that we respect life in this country. We respect life from conception to natural death, and at all stages along the way. Not, you know, we hear this criticism, oh, you just care about the baby in the womb, and once it's born, you don't care. That's not been my experience with people who are pro-life. A 10-year-old is as valuable in God's eyes as a 10-week-old, and a 100-year-old is as valuable in God's eyes as a 50-year-old, on and on and on and on. We are all made in the image and likeness of God. We are all children of God. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue, open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Held high, such small sacrifice. If not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight.